I was the forgotten sister, the quiet one in the shadows of Blossom's plans, Bubble's light and Buttercup's fire. And maybe that's why him chose me. With every whispered promise, I unraveled the bond between us. One lie, one poisoned cup at a time. Broke them. I watched them fall apart. And for a while, I thought I wanted it. But guilt cuts deeper than any blade. And when I realized what I'd done, I had to go back. Into the Red Room. Into the monster's lair. To steal back their love. Or be lost forever. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Chained by Shadows. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, We Were the Light. If I close my eyes long enough, I can still remember what it felt like to be safe. To laugh without flinching. To sleep without checking the locks twice. To hear my sister's voices echo through the house like music, and not feel like every word was a countdown. Back then, we were a unit. Three rays of sunlight and one forgotten shadow, bound together not just by blood, but by pain, resilience, and the kind of love that forms when you've survived the unthinkable side by side. We weren't always fractured. We weren't always enemies. There was a time, God, it feels like a dream now, when we were the light that kept this city alive. Blossom, Bubbles, Buttercup, and me. They used to say we were born for greatness. Maybe we were. Or maybe we were just born broken and knew how to wear our cracks like armor. We lived in a three-story house on the north edge of Townsville, the kind of place that used to feel too big but somehow grew smaller every year. The professor's house. His legacy. His lab still sealed behind reinforced steel doors we'd stopped opening a long time ago. After he disappeared, it became ours. There were no bedtime stories anymore. No science experiments in the kitchen. No carefully packed lunches or emergency alarms blaring through the night. Just the four of us, stumbling through the rubble of what he left behind, trying to remember how to live like girls instead of ghosts. Blossom kept us going. She was always the commander, the strategist, the one with a clipboard in one hand and a weight no child should ever carry pressing on her spine. She got up before the sun, mapped our schedules, made sure we ate, and negotiated with the mayor when we needed funds. Her room was a battlefield of sticky notes and legal pads, each one full of contingency plans and quiet fears. She never said it, but I knew she was terrified. Not of monsters. Not of enemies. But of failing us. Bubbles was the heart. She still believed in magic, in happy endings, in the healing power of glitter and pinky promises. She painted murals in the hallway, fed stray animals she couldn't keep, and left sticky notes on the fridge with doodles that said, "Smile today, okay?" Her light wasn't naive. It was defiant. Like she refused to let the world take her joy away no matter how many times it tried. But I saw the cracks when she thought no one was watching. The nights she cried into her pillow. The way she started therapy in secret. The way her hands shook when the sirens screamed too close to home. Buttercup. She was the fire. Rage was her language. Love her weapon. She wasn't just strong. She was loud about it, unapologetic, with a snarl in her voice and scars on her knuckles. She punched first, asked questions later. And if anyone dared look at us wrong, she'd be the first to start swinging. But behind all that steel was someone who was just trying to keep us from falling apart. She hated vulnerability. So, of course, she was the one who held us the tightest. And then there was me. You wouldn't know my name unless you asked. I didn't shine like Blossom. I didn't glow like Bubbles. I didn't burn like Buttercup. I lingered in the background, a shadow at the edge of every conversation, the echo behind their every movement. It wasn't that they didn't love me. They did. In their own way. But in every trio, there's always one who doesn't quite fit. One whose voice is a beat-off rhythm. One who holds the camera instead of stepping into the frame. That was me. The invisible sister. I watched from the doorway as they lived. Laughing, fighting, crying, surviving. I memorized every habit, every tick, every tiny ritual that kept them connected. Bubbles always added honey to her tea. Buttercup couldn't sleep without the sound of a storm. Blossom had a tiny scar on her wrist she never talked about, and she touched it when she was overwhelmed. I cataloged them like artifacts, cause it made me feel close, cause it made me feel like I mattered. The truth is, I didn't mind being invisible, not at first. I liked the silence. I liked being the one no one suspected of anything. The one who could disappear for hours and not be questioned. The one who could listen at doors, observe from corners, and never have to explain why she felt more like an observer than a participant. But invisibility comes with a price. You fade long enough, and eventually you forget how to exist at all. That's when the letters started. It was subtle. First, a piece of paper slid under the door at 3:17 a.m. No name, no sender. Just a few words written in red ink that bled into the fibers like poison. They'll never choose you. I stared at it for 5 full minutes, waiting for the punchline, waiting for Blossom's handwriting, waiting for Buttercup to burst out laughing. But it wasn't a joke. It wasn't a prank. It was a whisper from somewhere that knew exactly where to hit. The next morning, I burned the letter. I didn't tell anyone. Why would I? They would have said I was being dramatic, or paranoid, or worse, delusional. And maybe I was. But the next night, there was another note. And this one had a name. You could be powerful. You could be seen. That name. That thing. The one we'd buried behind a dozen battles and years of forced silence. The one even Blossom didn't speak out loud anymore. We never fully defeated him, we just survived him. And now he was reaching for me. First I thought I was dreaming. Then I thought I was hallucinating. But by the time the third letter arrived, folded into the pages of my sketchbook like it had always been there, I stopped doubting it. I started reading them. Obsessively. There was something about the way he wrote, like he already knew me. Not the version my sisters saw, but the real me. The one who was tired of watching. The one who wanted to be more. I didn't tell my sisters. Not because I didn't trust them. But because for the first time in my life, someone was choosing me. Felt dangerous. Felt wrong. But more than anything, it felt good. God, I wish I had said something then. But I didn't. And that silence, that one choice to keep it to myself, was the first chain I wrapped around us all. Chapter 2. His voice in my veins. Didn't happen all at once. People think manipulation is some grand theatrical thing. Flash of red smoke. A dramatic monologue. A hand on your shoulder as you sign your soul away. But the truth, it's slower than that. Quieter. It seeps in through the cracks you pretend aren't there. It finds you in the in-between moments, when the world turns its back, and you start whispering to yourself just to fill the silence. That's how he got in. Not with a bang, but with a whisper. At first, I thought I was just hearing echoes. Sleep-deprived static. A trick of the mind playing loops in the background of my day. I'd be folding laundry and think I heard my name. Brushing my teeth and feel someone behind me in the mirror. I started turning around mid-sentence, looking for something I couldn't name. And slowly, I began to hear him. His voice didn't sound like thunder. Didn't crack through the air like lightning. It was warm. Familiar. Like velvet dipped in venom. He spoke like he already lived inside me. Like he was just reminding me of things I'd always known but buried too deep to admit. You don't belong with them anymore, do you? The first time I heard it, I dropped the bowl I was washing. It shattered across the kitchen tile, and Bubbles came running in, her eyes wide, hands already reaching out like she could piece me back together just as easily as the dish. You okay? She asked gently, kneeling by my side as I stared at the fragments. He nodded. Like, she believed me. Course she did. Because in her mind, I was still her sister. Still safe. Still on her side. She didn't know something inside me had already begun to shift. Him didn't speak every day. He wasn't consistent like Blossom's routines or suffocating like Buttercup's sarcasm. He came in waves. Unpredictable. Always when I least expected it. He whispered when I was alone. In the laundry room. On the rooftop at night. Sometimes even in my dreams. Those were the worst. I'd wake up covered in sweat, The sheets twisted like ropes, my throat raw from screaming into nothing. And each morning after, there would be a new gift left in my room. Not flashy, not showy, but personal, frighteningly so. A hair clip I'd lost months ago, polished and new. A page torn from my old journal, burned around the edges, with certain lines underlined in red. A glass figurine of a little girl with no face, her hands raised in surrender. Each object came with a feeling, like being watched, like being known. And God help me, some part of me craved it. I had spent so long being overlooked, being the quiet one, the support system, the one who stayed behind when the other three went on missions. Blossom said she needed me to hold the fort. Bubbles said she loved how reliable I was. Buttercup said I was the only one who didn't piss her off. I wore those compliments like shackles, because none of them saw me for who I really was. But him, he saw me. He didn't speak to my usefulness. He spoke to my potential. He didn't ask me to be small. He fed the parts of me I'd spent years starving. You're the only one who thinks. The only one who sees. They're too loud. Too arrogant. Too blind. You little one. You could be everything. His words made my skin crawl in the best and worst ways. I hated myself for listening, but I kept listening anyway. Because his voice was in my veins now. And there's no detox for that kind of poison. One night, I stayed up after everyone else had gone to bed. Blossom was passed out at her desk, papers scattered across her chest. Bubbles had curled into a ball on the couch, a stuffed octopus clutched to her chest. Buttercup was snoring with one boot still on, a bottle of half-drunk whiskey next to her bed. The house was quiet in that eerie post-midnight way that makes everything feel sacred and cursed at the same time. I went to the attic. It was the one place in the house no one else went. Too many memories, too much dust, too many failed experiments left behind like corpses in glass cases. That's where I found the mirror. It hadn't been there before. I was sure of it. But that night, it was standing upright against the far wall, tall and narrow, its surface rippling like oil on water. It didn't reflect the room behind me. It reflected something else entirely. Dark forest. A velvet hallway. A red throne. Him. He was sitting there like he'd been waiting for years. Like I was late to my own coronation. He didn't speak with his mouth. He didn't have to. The words came straight into my head, bypassing everything rational, slipping into the softest, most desperate parts of me. Do you like your gifts? I couldn't speak. My throat was sandpaper. My legs trembled. Do you want more? I should have run. I should have smashed the mirror with a hammer and screamed until the whole house came down. But instead, I stepped closer. Because the thing about him is, he doesn't force you. He doesn't bind you with chains. He lets you choose. That's what makes it worse. It's not coercion if you reach for the leash yourself. The next morning, I told myself it was a dream. Hallucination. A side effect of stress and exhaustion and a lifetime of repressing who I really was. But when I opened my closet, there was a dress hanging there that I'd never owned. Deep burgundy. Soft as blood. With a tag that read, "For when you're ready to stop pretending." I wore it that night. And when I passed by Bubbles in the hallway, she smiled at me like nothing had changed. "That's pretty," she said sweetly. "You look different. Good different." Thanked her. And then I went to the attic again. The mirror was waiting. This time him spoke clearly. Not in riddles. Not in insinuations. But in a tone that made every nerve in my body tighten like violin strings. "Let me show you how it feels to be powerful. Be seen. To never be forgotten again." He held out his hand. And I, desperate, angry, lonely, and so damn tired of being overlooked, took it. That was the night he truly entered me. Not physically. Spiritually. Psychologically. Metaphysically. I let him in. And after that night I stopped needing letters. His voice lived inside me. Second heartbeat. Second mind. An infection I welcomed. I still woke up every morning and played my part. I helped Blossom organize her files. I laughed at Bubbles' jokes. I sparred with Buttercup and let her win. I wore my invisibility like armor. But I wasn't theirs anymore. Not fully. Because now I belong to someone else. And with every passing day, his voice got louder. And mine. Mine got harder to hear. Chapter 3, Little Lies, Heavy Chains. I didn't fall all at once. I wish I had. I wish I could tell you there was a moment. A sharp, clean break, when I turned my back on my sisters. One fatal choice. One dramatic scene. But it wasn't like that. Never is. It's not the leap that ruins you. It's the inching. The steady, almost imperceptible drift from who you were to who you swore you'd never become. And when you realize how far you've fallen, it's too late to climb back up without bringing the whole mountain down with you. I started with lies so small they barely qualified as lies. Tiny distortions. Cued truths. Nothing harmful. Nothing overt. Just adjustments. I told Blossom I had already taken out the trash when I hadn't. I told Bubbles she looked beautiful even when her eyes were red and puffy from crying all night. I told Buttercup I hadn't read her notebook when I had. Cover to cover, every angry thought and scared secret scribbled in ink that bled through the pages. At first, the lies didn't even come from him. They came from me. From some dark, secret part of me that was already tired of being the glue that held everything together while everyone else got to fall apart in spectacular fashion. The more I lied, the easier it became. And he noticed. Of course he did. "You're learning," him whispered one night as I stared at the mirror. It had now fused to the attic wall like a tumor, pulsing faintly when I entered. "You understand now, don't you? The world doesn't reward honesty. It rewards control." He was right. I had spent years playing it safe, being the good sister, the silent observer. Where had it gotten me? Left behind. Forgotten. Fading. But now. I was seen. By someone, at least. I didn't care if it was a monster. I just needed to matter to someone. So the lies grew. They evolved. I started testing limits. I accidentally forgot to tell Blossom that the mayor called about a breach in Sector 6. I moved her files. Rearranged her calendar. Small things. Enough to throw her off, make her second guess herself. Nothing catastrophic. Then I planted a seed in Buttercup's mind. She was already on edge. Angry, volatile. Impossible to reason with when her emotions got the best of her. I caught her in the hallway and said it in passing, so casually that she almost didn't register it. "I think Bubbles has been texting Ace again." "Complete lie." She blinked. Her jaw clenched. But she didn't argue. That was the moment I knew she wanted to believe it. Because believing it meant she could finally justify the feelings she didn't want to deal with. The jealousy. The abandonment. The fear of being left behind. And just like that, the wedge slid in. I didn't need to hammer it. Just let it rest. Within days, Buttercup was snapping at Bubbles over nothing. Calling her out in the kitchen for leaving the stove on when it had been me. Rolling her eyes when Bubbles tried to show her a drawing she'd made. Pulling away when Bubbles reached for her arm. And him. He purred with delight. "You have a gift," he told me. "They think they're so strong. But they're just little girls pretending. You're the only one with the spine to see through the fantasy." I started believing him. And when you believe a monster's praise long enough, you stop recognizing your own reflection. The next phase wasn't lies. It was truths weaponized. I told Bubbles that Blossom had started locking her door at night, even though she hadn't meant anything by it. "She says she needs quiet," I whispered. "But I heard her on the phone. She said she can't handle your mood swings anymore." Bubbles looked down at her shoes, her lip trembling. I didn't stop. I sat beside her on the couch and took her hand like a good sister, like someone who cared, and said, "She just doesn't understand you the way I do." That was the moment Bubbles started pulling away from Blossom. She stopped sitting beside her at breakfast. Stopped helping her organize her files. When Blossom asked if she was okay, Bubbles just nodded and smiled too wide like she'd glued it on. And then came the notes. Forged them. Slipped them under doors like love letters, like threats, like poison-dipped truths. "To Blossom," I wrote. They talk about you when you're not in the room. They don't trust your plans anymore. They think you're cracking. To Buttercup, you're not her favorite. You never were. To Bubbles, it's not in your head. She really does want you gone. They never knew it was me. Why would they? I was the quiet one, the helpful one, the sister who kept everything running in the background while the others burned brightly. But the thing about shadows is, they're always watching. And him. He started visiting me more frequently. He taught me things. How to touch the mind without leaving fingerprints. How to twist perception with a single phrase. How to slip between memory and paranoia like a hand through water. He said it wasn't manipulation. It was truth shaping. He said I wasn't a villain. I was a sculptor. And I wanted to believe him. Because the guilt, it was still there. Still gnawing at my ribs at night. Still crawling up my throat like bile. But then I'd hear Blossom raise her voice at Bubbles. See Buttercup slam her door. Watch Bubbles cry in the laundry room, whispering to herself, "Why does it feel like we're falling apart?" And I'd think, good. Because if they were broken, then I wasn't the only one anymore. I wasn't alone in my ruin. One evening, I walked into the kitchen and found all three of them in silence. Blossom was staring at a pile of torn papers, her hands shaking. Buttercup was nursing a split knuckle. Bubbles was coloring, but her eyes were glassy and distant. I stood there for a second, waiting for them to look up. They didn't. They didn't even notice I was there. And for the first time in weeks, I felt something shift. Something ugly and hot and crawling beneath my skin. Not satisfaction. Not guilt. Emptiness. Like I'd torn down the only house I'd ever known just to prove I could. I almost confessed that night. I almost told them everything. The letters. Mirror. But then I found something on my pillow. Photograph. When we were younger. Blossom had her arms around all of us. A rare moment of softness. Bubbles was laughing, her face sunlit and pure. Buttercup had that crooked smirk she wore when she was proud but didn't want to admit it. And me. My face was burned out. Not scratched. Not covered. Burn. Charred into ash. And on the back of the photo, in that same red ink. You're almost ready. I put the photo in the drawer. Closed it. And locked the truth inside with it. Because it was too late to go back now. I had built my throne from their doubt. And every lie I told was another chain around our necks. Tighter. Heavier. Unbreakable. Chapter 4. The Red Room. The mirror had grown roots. Not literal ones. Though I wouldn't have been surprised if it had. But something worse. Its presence had seeped into the foundation of our house. Into the corners of every room, into my blood. I could feel it even when I wasn't looking at it. Hear its hum in the pipes. Taste its bitterness in the morning coffee. By then it had been weeks, maybe longer, since I first answered him's call. Time was strange around him. Elastic. Days stretched like wire, nights collapsed like lungs. There were moments I couldn't even remember how I got from one room to another. Only that my hands would be covered in charcoal or ink or red. I kept telling myself I was still in control. That I could stop any time. That I was just observing the rot. I hadn't become it. But that's the thing about corruption. It doesn't knock. It doesn't introduce itself. It just puts a hand on your back and walks beside you, whispering until its voice becomes your own. It was just after 3 a.m. when it happened. The house was asleep. Not peacefully. Nothing about our sleep had been peaceful in weeks, but deadened like it had finally given up. Blossom was passed out with a bottle of migraine pills beside her, still wearing her blazer. Bubbles had curled into the corner of the couch with her face buried in a pillow that had long since stopped smelling like lavender. Buttercup was sprawled out on the floor of her room, headphones jammed in, music blaring loud enough to keep her demons just barely at bay. And me. I was standing in front of the mirror. I didn't plan to be. My feet just moved. My hands just opened the attic door. Like sleepwalking into a nightmare I could recite by heart. The mirror didn't shimmer this time. Pulsed. Once. Then it cracked open like a mouth, and I stepped through before I even knew what I was doing. Didn't feel like walking. It felt like falling in slow motion, my breath leaving my lungs molecule by molecule. The air smelled like sulfur and rose petals. Sweet and rotten. Beautiful and wrong. I landed on marble. Black, slick, veined with red that glowed like dying embers. The room around me wasn't large, but it felt endless. The walls weren't walls. They were velvet curtains that moved like they were breathing, and behind them, shadows, shifting, twitching. It was warm. Not the comforting kind of warm. The kind of heat that sticks to your skin like a fever. The kind that tells you something ancient is in the room, and it knows you. At the center was a throne. Crimson. Carved from bone. Him. He wasn't towering or grotesque-like in the stories. That would have been easy to fight. Easy to hate. But he wasn't. He was exquisite. Long limbs, symmetrical face. The kind of beauty that made your eyes water if you stared too long. He smiled like someone who had been smiling for centuries and never once meant it. His eyes weren't red. They were void. And when he spoke, his voice didn't echo, it layered. It filled the room like music, wrapping around itself in harmony and dissonance. "My little songbird," he crooned, reclining back, his fingers drumming idly on the armrest of his throne. "You've done well." I couldn't speak. My tongue felt too heavy. He stood, and with each step toward me, the floor bloomed beneath his feet, red roses sprouting from nothing, opening and dying in an instant. He reached for my chin, tilting my face up. "You've begun to break them. Gently. Elegantly. Not with violence, no, violence is messy. Crude. But lies." He laughed, low and intimate. "Lies are art." I wanted to flinch. I didn't. Because a small, terrible part of me liked the praise. "They're unraveling," I whispered, my voice barely more than wind. "They're forgetting how to hold each other. How to trust." He nodded, pleased. "But," I said, and my throat clenched around the word. "I feel wrong." He smiled again. "Waiter. Enough to show teeth. Too many teeth. That's the old you, still clinging. The part that fears freedom. The part that believes love is unconditional." He turned and walked toward a pedestal that hadn't been there a moment ago. On it sat a vial, small, ornate, filled with a liquid that shifted between colors the way oil does in water. "I need you to give them this," he said, lifting the vial between two fingers and letting the red light catch on the glass. "Just a drop. In each of their drinks. Tea, water, coffee. It doesn't matter. What does it do?" "Yes. It sets them free." "Free how?" He leaned in close, and his breath was cold. "It severs the root. Memory. Emotion. That binding illusion they call love. Just one drop, and they'll forget why they ever needed each other." I stared at the vial. "Tinny. Beautiful. Deadly. You said this wouldn't hurt them." "And it won't," he replied smoothly. "No blood. No pain. They'll simply drift. And you, my dear, will finally be alone enough to become seen." Took it. I don't remember making the decision, only that my hand closed around the vial and tucked it into the lining of my coat like it belonged there, like it had always been mine. But the moment I touched it, I felt something shift in the room. The velvet curtains stopped moving. The shadows behind them grew still. And for the first time since I stepped into this place, I felt afraid. Truly, viscerally afraid. Not of him, but of myself. Because a part of me, maybe the biggest part, was already planning when and how to use it. I turned to leave. He let me. But as I stepped back through the mirror, his voice followed me. Not as a whisper this time, but a promise. "After this, you'll never need them again." Back in the attic, I stood still for what felt like an hour. The house groaned around me. The walls sighed. I thought I might be dreaming. I hoped I was dreaming. But when I reached into my coat, the vial was still there, cold, waiting. I took it to my room and hid it behind the loose panel under my bed, the one we used to stuff with comic books and stolen candy. I stared at it for a long time, thinking maybe if I stared hard enough, it would disappear. Maybe if I closed my eyes, it would vanish, and him with it. But it didn't. And he didn't. And I didn't scream. I didn't cry. I just crawled into bed and stared at the ceiling until the first hints of sunrise bled through the blinds. Down the hall, I could hear Blossom typing on her laptop again, probably trying to plan her way out of the collapse she hadn't even realized had started. I could hear Bubbles humming a lullaby to herself, shaky and uneven. I could hear Buttercup pacing, fists clenched, talking to herself in the mirror like she was preparing for war. They were still themselves, but not for long. And me. I curled tighter into the blankets, wrapped my arms around the hollow in my chest, and whispered the one truth I could still admit. I don't know if I want to save them. Or break them faster. Chapter 5. The day I betrayed my sisters. The day didn't start with thunder. Started with pancakes. That's the thing no one tells you about betrayal. It's not always born in chaos. Sometimes it blooms in routine. In the quiet. In the moments when everything looks normal on the outside. But something poisonous is humming beneath the surface. The sky was soft that morning, painted in that sleepy gold-pink hue that only shows up when the universe is pretending to be kind. Bubbles was in the kitchen humming a half-forgotten tune, flipping pancakes like she used to when we were kids. Blossom sat at the dining table, scrolling through her tablet, occasionally muttering notes to herself. Buttercup was leaning against the wall, one boot on, arms crossed, chewing on a toothpick like she was trying to pretend she didn't want to be there. And I was standing at the sink, holding three mismatched mugs and wondering which one I'd use to poison my sisters. I didn't call it that, not in my head. Poison felt too blunt, too cruel, too loud for what I was about to do. This wasn't poison, I told myself. This was mercy. This was release. This was him's gift, a way to set them free from the constant cycle of suspicion, tension, dependency. A way to untangle the web we'd all become trapped in without realizing it. I didn't believe that. Not really. But I needed to. Because if I didn't believe the lie, I wouldn't have been able to do what came next. I brewed the tea slowly. Carefully. Blossom liked hers strong and bitter. No milk. Just a splash of lemon. Bubbles preferred honey. A lot of it. And she always made this face. Nose wrinkled, eyes bright. When she took the first sip, like the sweetness made the world tolerable again. Buttercup usually didn't drink tea. She thought it was pretentious. But she'd drink it today. I knew she would. Because I'd spent the last week wearing her down, whispering about how tight her muscles looked, how exhausted she seemed. You need to unwind, I said yesterday. Let me make you something. I have this new blend, calming, strong. She had rolled her eyes, but she didn't say no. I reached under the loose panel beneath my bed that morning and took out the vial. The glass was cold, heavier than I remembered. The liquid inside shimmered like blood dipped in stars. I held it up to the light and whispered, "I'm sorry." Then I unscrewed the cap and let a single drop fall into each mug. Just one. That's all it took. That's what him promised. And I believed him because the alternative, the possibility that this would destroy them instead of release them, was too much to bear. The tea smelled the same. That was the most haunting part. No acrid stench. No black smoke curling into the air. Just peppermint, lemon, honey. They didn't hesitate. Bubbles took the first sip, sitting cross-legged on the couch with a blanket wrapped around her like armor. She smiled at me. "You always make the best tea." Blossom was more cautious. She took a small sip first, lips pursed, then nodded. "Not bad," she muttered, eyes never leaving her screen. Buttercup was last. She stared at the mug like it had insulted her. Then, with a grunt, she lifted it and downed it in three long gulps. No fireworks. No screams. Just three girls in a living room, drinking tea made by someone who no longer belonged to them. The changes didn't happen right away. At first, it was just a look in Blossom's eyes. Confusion. She glanced at her tablet like she couldn't remember what she'd been doing. Her fingers hovered over the screen for a full minute, unmoving. Bubbles stopped humming. She looked down at the drawing in her lap and blinked three times, like she was trying to remember why she was holding it. Buttercup cracked her neck and sat down, muttering something about needing a nap. And I stood in the kitchen, drying the mugs, watching them fall apart like snowflakes melting in my palm. It was slow, cruel, subtle. Over the next few hours, the distance grew. Not visibly, not in a way anyone else might have noticed. But I knew them, and I could see it. The way Blossom didn't bother to correct Bubbles when she misquoted a statistic. The way Buttercup didn't roll her eyes when Bubbles offered her a hug. She just turned away. The way Bubbles stopped trying to fill the silence. By nightfall, they barely looked at each other. I remember walking past the living room and pausing at the doorway. The TV was on some nature documentary. Bubbles was curled up on one side of the couch, hugging her knees. Blossom sat in the armchair, legs crossed, her gaze vacant. Buttercup leaned against the window, arms folded, watching the street outside. Not one of them spoke. Not even a good night. It was like someone had erased the emotional bridge between them. Had done this.
Me.
And the worst part. I didn't feel powerful. I didn't feel free. Felt nothing. Just this hollow ache in my chest, like something ancient had been carved out of me and replaced with static. I went to my room, shut the door, and sat on the edge of my bed, staring at the mirror that had once been mine, now fused to the wall like a scar. Him appeared slowly, his smile already waiting. "Bravo," he whispered, clapping slowly. "You've done beautifully." I didn't respond. He tilted his head, watching me like a cat watching a mouse try to pretend it's a lion. "You look disappointed," he said. "Did you expect them to scream? To fall at your feet? To beg for your forgiveness?" "No," I said hoarsely. "I expected to feel something." "You will," he promised. "Eventually. When you're ready to take what's yours." He extended a hand again, and this time I didn't take it. Not because I was strong, but because I didn't trust myself not to break completely if I touched him again. I curled up in bed and stared at the ceiling. Somewhere down the hall, I heard Bubbles crying, but the sound was muted, like it had been pressed beneath glass. Blossom paced her room. I knew the rhythm of her steps. Buttercup was still by the window. They were still alive, still breathing. But the thread that had bound us, had saved us again and again, was gone. Cut by my hand. The day I betrayed my sisters didn't end with a battle. It ended with silence. Not the peaceful kind, but the kind that settles after a bomb goes off. The kind that leaves dust in your throat and cracks in your ribs. And still, somewhere deep inside me, him whispered, "This is only the beginning." Chapter 6. The fire we forgot. We didn't fall all at once. We smoldered. Like embers buried beneath ash. Burning quiet, unseen, until nothing was left to burn but bone. I used to think the collapse would be loud. A scream, a siren, a fist through drywall. That's how it always happened with us. Even our pain was noisy. But after I slipped the poison into their cups, the world didn't end with fury. It ended with apathy. Slow corrosion. Hollowing out. Townsville had always been a strange place, suspended in this cartoon logic where heroes punched monsters and everything reset by morning. But after that day, after I broke the unbreakable, the fabric of things began to change. Started small. The mayor's voice stopped playing on the radio. Citizens began locking their doors in broad daylight. The sky lost its color, just a little. Clouds seemed to linger longer. The air felt heavier. Like the city was waiting for something it couldn't name. Like it knew its protectors were drifting. And we were. God, we were. Blossom, once the brain, the tactician, the one who could calculate a victory out of chaos, started losing track of time. She missed meetings. She forgot patrol routes. She'd stare at her planner like it was written in a foreign language. Her room became a graveyard of half-finished schedules and unopened envelopes. She started talking to herself, not out loud, but in soft murmurs, like she was trying to remember who she used to be. Bubbles stopped painting. That was the first red flag. Her sketchbooks used to line every surface, sunlight dancing across wet watercolors, blues and golds and pinks that made the world feel gentler. But now, the easel gathered dust. The brushes dried out. She spent her days sitting on the window seat, watching the city like it was a place she'd never seen before, like it had never belonged to her. And Buttercup, she stopped punching walls. And that terrified me, because rage was her language, her compass, the way she navigated the world. And now she barely spoke at all. She'd sit at the table with her knuckles pressed to her jaw, not blinking. She didn't even pretend to be okay anymore. Her silence wasn't angry, it was numb. And that was far, far worse. We stopped eating meals together. Stopped saying goodnight. Stopped checking in. We existed in the same house, but we were strangers passing through shadow. The warmth was gone. The glue was gone. We weren't fighting because fighting requires caring. We had become separate planets orbiting a dead star. And me. I watched it all unfold from the eye of the storm I had created. I told myself this was what I wanted. That this silence, this emptiness, it was the price of freedom. I had unshackled them from the burdens of codependence, of memory, of sisterhood. But late at night, when the house creaked and the city moaned, I would press my hands to my ears to drown out the sound of nothing. Because that's what it was now. Not peace. Not liberation. Nothing. No laughter. No arguments. No life. Him visited me more often now. Sometimes in the mirror. Sometimes in dreams. Sometimes in reflections that weren't supposed to be there. I'd catch him in the back of my spoon. In the shimmer of the microwave door. In puddles on the sidewalk after it rained. Always smiling. Always pleased. "You're a sculptor of silence," he whispered one night, as I lay on the floor of my room, unable to sleep. "Look at what you've created. A masterpiece of stillness. Then why does it feel like death?" "Yes." "Because life was a lie," he said. "And lies are loud. This is truth. Truth is quiet." He kissed my forehead. And I sobbed for an hour after he left. I couldn't go to them. Not because they wouldn't listen. But because I didn't know how to explain what I had done. How do you confess to setting fire to the only home you've ever known? Just to see what would survive the smoke. The worst part wasn't the silence. It was the moments when something almost sparked. One morning I caught Blossom looking at Bubbles with a flicker of recognition. Just a flash like muscle memory. She almost smiled. But Bubbles didn't meet her gaze. And Blossom turned away. That was when I started trying to undo it. First, in secret, I pulled out old photo albums. Left them open on the table. Cooked their favorite meals. Played songs we used to scream sing in the car. Nothing worked. Blossom asked who made the food and barely touched it. Bubbles frowned at the music and turned it off. Buttercup walked past the photo albums without even a glance. So I escalated. I tried to make them feel again. I staged a fake emergency. Smashed a window, set off the alarm. I watched as they scrambled, instincts flickering back to life. But something was missing. They didn't communicate. Blossom issued orders. Buttercup ignored them. Bubbles froze. And I realized. Even their reflexes were fading. Like the bond that made them sisters wasn't just emotional. It had been chemical. Cosmic. And I'd severed it at the root. Townsville noticed. It began to fray without its protectors. Monsters returned. Not the huge city-leveling ones. These were quieter, more insidious. Things that whispered in alleyways. Shadows that moved wrong. People disappearing, not in explosions, but in forgetfulness. Creeping rot. And every day, someone asked where the girls had gone. Why they no longer responded to cries for help. And I had to look those people in the eye and lie. They're tired. They're resting. They'll be back soon. And each time my voice cracked a little more. Because I knew the truth. They weren't coming back. Not the way they were. Not unless I did something impossible. Unless I went to him. Not for orders. Not for praise. But to undo it. To ask him for mercy. But I knew him. He didn't give. He only took. And if I wanted to fix what I broke, I'd have to steal it. break into the space I once walked into willingly and rip back what I gave away. Not for me. Not for forgiveness. But because for the first time in my life, I didn't want to be special. I wanted to be a sister again. Even if they never looked at me the same way. Even if I carried the scars forever. Even if I had to face him in his world, knowing full well I might not return. I made the decision that night. No more silence. No more shadows. I would step back into the Red Room, not as a disciple, but as a thief. And if him wanted war for what I stole, he'd get one. Chapter 7. Chains break loudly. I didn't knock. I didn't ask for permission. I marched into the attic, my breath ragged and loud in the silence, the floor groaning beneath every step like the house itself knew what I was about to do. The mirror was waiting, slick, monstrous, glowing faintly with the same color as blood seen underwater. It shimmered when it saw me, recognized me, not as a servant, not as a vessel, but as something worse. Traitor. Take me back, I whispered, voice already cracking under the weight of what I was about to do. I'm not asking. I'm coming. And it opened. No warning. No flare of light. Just a slow, viscous peeling of space and time, like fabric being ripped open from the inside. The Red Room was waiting on the other side, just as I left it. Velvet curtains undulating like lungs, black marble veined with red light, shadows twitching with anticipation. But it felt different this time. Colder. Heavier. Like him knew. He was already on the throne, fingers steepled beneath his chin, eyes glowing like dying stars. He smiled as I stepped through the mirror, slow and deliberate, the vial clutched tightly in my shaking hand. So, he said, voice like oil down my spine, you've come to pay the price. I didn't flinch. I couldn't afford to. I want them back, I said. All of them. Their memories. Their connection. Their fire. He tilted his head, amused. They were so peaceful like this, weren't they? Quiet. Obedient. Isn't this what you wanted? To finally have the house to yourself. To be the center. My throat burned. Yes. And I was wrong. He laughed, long and low, like it was the funniest thing he'd heard in centuries. You poor, desperate thing, he said. You think remorse is currency. That guilt is a key. You came to bargain. I came to take. That got his attention. For the first time he sat forward. You think you can steal from me? No, I said, pulling the modified vial from my coat pocket. The one I had been crafting in secret for days using every twisted piece of knowledge him had whispered into my head. I think I already have. I uncorked it and hurled it at the ground. Shattered. The moment it hit the marble, the room screamed. Not him. The room. The walls pulsed violently. The shadows behind the curtains thrashed and convulsed. The air turned to knives. The velvet drapes curled inward like they were trying to smother themselves. And him stood, no longer smiling. What did you do? He growled, voice stripped of seduction, now sharp and jagged like broken glass. I built a cure, I said, my own voice rising over the chaos. I twisted your magic against itself. Reversal. One drop for each of us. Three to undo what I broke. One for me, to remember the guilt forever. And one for you. His eyes narrowed. You cannot bind me. No, I said. But I can cut the cord. The floor cracked. A red fissure split through the center of the room, running between me and him like the parting of a wound. I felt the magic tearing at my skin, my memories unraveling and restitching inside my skull, the broken pieces realigning with unbearable force. And then I heard them. My sisters. Bubble's voice, trembling and confused. Why do I feel like I forgot something important? Buttercup angry raw. Something's not right. Something's wrong. And Blossom, quiet, razor sharp. She's not here. They remembered. They remembered me. And I wept. Because the thing I destroyed had not been lost. It had been buried. And now, it was clawing its way back to the surface. Him lunged toward me then, moving like wind and fire and screaming shadows. His hand reached for my throat, long fingers curling with intent. "You'll regret this," he snarled. But I didn't let him touch me, because I wasn't alone anymore. I turned and the mirror rippled behind me, glowing not red but white. Pure, blinding, pulsing with something he had no claim over. Love. Real love. Broken, messy, imperfect but real. And from that light stepped my sisters. Blossom, her eyes bright with fury. Bubbles, her hands trembling with power. Buttercup, fists clenched, jaw set. They stepped beside me, forming the circle we thought we'd lost. And together we fought. There are no words for that battle. No language strong enough to describe what it's like to fight your own monster. The one who lives inside your decisions, your weaknesses, your wants. Him didn't bleed. He fractured. Cracks running through his form like lightning across glass. We didn't strike him with fists or powers. We struck with memory. With shared pain. With forgiveness. Every time Bubbles cried and I held her anyway. Every time Blossom faltered and Buttercup caught her without a word. Every time I stood at the edge, and they reached for me anyway. Those moments burned him like acid. He screamed. And the red room collapsed. The shadows turned to smoke. The throne split down the middle. The walls folded inward. And him vanished, ripped from the world we built together, dragged back into the dark he came from. His screams fading like a bad dream at sunrise. When it was over, we stood in the ruins of what once controlled me. Breathless, shaking, alive. Blossom turned to me first. Her expression unreadable. "You did this," she said. "You broke us." I nodded, unable to speak. "And you brought us back." I looked at her, expecting anger. She stepped forward and, without a word, wrapped her arms around me. Bubbles joined next, her sobs wetting my shoulder. Then Buttercup, reluctantly, silently. We stood like that for a long time. In the silence after the storm. In the quiet after the chains had snapped. And I finally understood what redemption feels like. Not peace. Not purity. But the permission to try again. We left the red room together. We sealed the mirror. Buried it beneath concrete and salt and prayers. We burned the attic. Rebuilt the house. Tiled the kitchen with stained glass made from shattered mugs. Painted the walls with Bubbles art. Started eating together again. Small steps. Forgiveness isn't clean. Trust isn't instant. There are still nights when I wake up shaking, sure that him is behind me. But my sisters are always there now. One on each side. Breathing. Holding. Living. The day I betrayed them will live with me forever. But so will the day they let me come home. And sometimes, chains don't just bind. Sometimes they break loud enough to set you free.